excision number 12433, reel 2.
Mr. Holbrow, reel 2. Did you see anything of the of the French army at this time?
No, nothing at all at this time. Only the Belgians.
What do you remember actually happening next once you reached the Albert Canal?
We came under artillery fire and so on, and we stayed there for a day and a night.
Which infantry units were you with? Which British units, infantry?
I can't tell you who we were actually with at that point. I know later when I a week or so later, I can tell you one or two units, but I can't actually remember the ones on the Albert Canal.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
When the orders came to retreat, we were completely mystified, not realising the Germans had broken through elsewhere and were now behind us in places. However, we turned around and hastily retired back to France. But by this time, the roads were choked with refugees and fleeing Belgian soldiers, and it became a bit of a rout, with no food or supplies getting through to us. About this time, a recent copy of the Daily Mirror somehow reached us from England. The headlines were, "Now we have them by the throat." I remember bivouacking one dark night in a wood with a Royal Tank Regiment squadron of Matilda tanks under camouflage netting. We couldn't understand why such a powerful unit was not engaging the enemy. But I have since learned they were later used in a counterattack at Arras or Cambrai and virtually wiped out. Eventually, we ended up for one night back where we had started, at Marigny. From there, the company was split into two or three sections and sent to fight as infantry at Cassel and Arsbrook about the 26th to the 27th of May. I presume this was to cover the general BEF evacuation at Dunkirk, of which we were not aware at that time. My section arrived at Arsbrook about the 27th of May. The town was deserted, and we found signs that some of the buildings had been hurriedly evacuated by the BEF officers, leaving untouched bottles of expensive spirits and wine. Our section officer, Second Lieutenant Keeble, posted us in the churchyard, surrounded us with mines, and gave us orders to fire at any Germans advancing into the town. Although we had only 1918 rifles and one Bren gun and one anti-tank gun, the German infantry stopped advancing when we opened fire, and there was a lull while they brought up mortars, trench mortars. They lobbed mortar shells at us using the church tower as a marker, and parts of the tower, the stone tower, kept falling down on us. It was also obvious from various sounds that they were bringing up tanks. Our officer realised we should all be killed to no purpose and ordered us to evacuate by lorry at nightfall. Unfortunately, one of our lorries ran over one of our mines and blew the driver's leg off. We scrambled into the remaining lorries and ran the gauntlet of fire from tanks, etc., Several of our chaps were killed and wounded before we eventually got clear of the town.
Did you manage to evacuate the chap who'd lost his leg?
Yes.
Had you been on the rifle or on the Bren gun?
I'd been on the rifle. I'll tell you about the Bren gun later. I'd been on the rifle. I fired several shots up the street. I could see the Germans coming, about 70 or 80 yards away. I fired in their direction, as we all did, and they hastily pulled themselves into doorways and that, and we never saw any more of them, and that was when they brought up the mortars.
Do you think you inflicted any casualties on the Germans?
Haven't a clue. Tried to.
How did you feel like being in action for the first time?
Quite exhilarated at that time, but it was rather horrible when we ran the gauntlet coming out of the town and saw the killed and wounded, you know. And that was a bit frightening then, and that all our lorries being fired on and so on.
How big a British unit was there in Hasbrook, do you think?
At that time, only us, I think.
Just a section?
Yes. Wait a minute, though.
So you said that you thought you were about 100 strong?
Yes, yes.
Can you take up the story from there, from running the gauntlet?
Yes, sure. We got clear of the town. Early the following morning, the 28th of May, we linked up with several infantry units, and our officer was ordered to man some outposts in order to stem the German advance on Dunkirk. It poured with rain all day, and he led us over miles of open country with only ditches to protect us from sporadic German machine gun fire. We had had no food for several days. We were exhausted and morale was very low, when suddenly a major or colonel of the Royal West Sussex Regiment appeared right out of the blue on his own and told our officer that all the other units had retired and we were on our own.
This West Surrey or West Sussex?
West Sussex. No, Royal Sussex. I'm awfully sorry.
Yes.
The Royal Sussex Regiment. The Royal Sussex Regiment. The Royal Sussex. And we were virtually on our own, and we should leave, get out before it was too late.
How did the low morale show itself?
Well, we grumbled a lot, of course, and we couldn't really... I mean, the officer knew more than we did, and we didn't really know what it was all about, you know, and we felt we were being, abandoned, which in fact we were, as it proved by what this officer said.
How was the chap without the leg faring?
I don't know what happened to him. He was in another section, you see. There were three sections, you see. The other two sections, I think, were at Cassel or in the vicinity, you see. So I really don't know what happened to him. There was a young chap called Stimpson. He was actually killed. Stimpson, a militia boy. I suppose he was just left there. I don't know what happened to Corporal Phillips, that's right, who lost his legs. I suppose he was abandoned. I don't know. The Germans, I really don't know about him.
So you said that this chap from the Sussex had given you this message?
Yeah.
What happened next?
Right. So, our officer said, right, follow me, and we set out in single file behind the officer. who was the only one of us with any idea of our whereabouts. I was towards the rear of the column with Sappers Woodman and Sapper Wiles, and we were helping the Bren gunner, Sapper Lewis, because he was saddled with a heavy Bren gun and the ammunition and so on. And that's why we were all exhausted, and you couldn't expect him to manage this lot on his own. So us three hung, we helped him, you see. Well, by now it was dark, and the others just went ahead and left us. That's what happened. And then Sapper Woodman was wounded by a machine gun bullet. And so there were the four of us with the Bren gun, the ammunition, and a wounded man.
Was that machine gun from the air or from the ground?
From the ground. There was nothing in the air at that time. It was dark by this time. As a result of all this, it slowed us down, and we lost contact with the rest of the section. However, we continued slowly in their direction and eventually came to a main road, which was chock-a-block with British Army lorries retreating to Dunkirk. It was now about midnight on the 28th of May, and all the lorries were full of soldiers from every conceivable unit. It was some time before we could even get our wounded man onto a lorry. And much later, before the three of us were able to scramble on the top of a water tank lorry. We congratulated ourselves on our good luck and fell asleep at once, only to be rudely awakened shortly afterwards when the whole convoy of vehicles came to a stop and we heard the Germans had blocked the road. This was at a place called Steenvoort. All the lorries were abandoned and ordered to be set on fire. Along with hundreds of others, we set off across the fields in a westerly direction, hoping to avoid the Germans, but had only gone a short distance when the front runners walked into Germans who were manning machine gun posts. And it appeared that we'd all walked into a trap and were surrounded by enemy machine gunners. At this point, the Germans yelled to us in English to send an officer to parley. And one eventually did so, and then he sent his companion back to say our position was hopeless. The senior officer then decided we should surrender and lay down our arms.
Where did he come from, that senior officer?
I have no idea.
What was he, a captain?
I cannot remember that. It was about 2 o'clock then, 2 o'clock on the 2 o'clock in the morning of the 29th. And such of us as still had rifles, we had to lay them down.
How did you feel like on capture?
We were very apprehensive about our likely fate. We should have been more so had we known of the massacre of 80 to 100 unarmed soldiers of the Royal Warwick Regiment by the SS at Wormhoot, a village just over a mile away, a few hours before, and also of the similar massacre of 97 men of the Royal Norfolk Regiment at Le Paradis, Pas-de-Calais, by the SS, which has since been well documented. However, we were fortunate enough to be captured by soldiers of the ordinary Wehrmacht. As soon as it was light, we were marched to a German artillery position and had to sit on the ground for some hours and watch their big guns shelling the town of Kassel, about a mile away, interspersed with dive bombing attacks by the Stukas. I didn't know at that time that other sections of the field, 2-6 field company, were assisting the defenders of Kassel, and some were killed. I saw their gravestones in the war cemetery at Kassel, which I visited in 1966.
How did the Germans treat you on capture?
Could I just
yes
fill in something by that? About Sapper Woodman, the wounded man. I learned in captivity from my people at home that the lorry conveying Sapper Woodman, the wounded man, got through to Dunkirk only half an hour before the Germans blocked the road, which resulted in my captivity. He recovered in England and contacted my parents and told them how thankful he was for the assistance we had given to him. Right.
I was asking you about your treatment on
Right,
camera.
Right, yes. Later in the day, some of us were locked up in a French church. We were exhausted and starving after several days without food, so we were very grateful when the Germans gave us some potatoes, which we were able to roast on a fire made with chairs and pews from the church. After one night in the church, an incredible ordeal commenced, involving marching hundreds of miles through northern France and Luxembourg for about 2 weeks. We covered between 10 and 20 miles a day, picking up French and British prisoners all the time. This was the first time I'd seen any French, and there were a lot by this time. So that we set off each day in a long, straggling line of many thousands. Each evening, we arrived at a temporary enclosure surrounded by lots of barbed wire and machine gun towers. We had to sleep on the bare ground every night without any blankets or covering whatsoever. I had lost all my kit when our lorries were set on fire. All I had was my battle dress and steel hat and rifle, both of which I had to surrender. I had no mess tin even. Fortunately, the wet weather changed after our capture, and it turned very hot and dry before these first few weeks of June. However, this had its own drawback, because we suffered badly from thirst, which caused us to drink from ditches and rivers, which caused a lot of dysentery, etc. The Germans made no attempt to feed us from their own supplies. They were only concerned with the logistics of their advancing armies, which were awesome in their size and power. We had never seen anything like the hundreds of huge tracked personnel carriers, the self-propelled guns, tanks, armoured cars, etc. The fighting German troops also seemed to be arrogant blonde giants, glorying in their military supremacy. It was hardly surprising that in such circumstances the prisoners' morale was very low.
Did you get any help from civilians on this long march?
Yes, I'll tell you about it in a minute. If you were lucky, each day you got 3 or 4 captured British hardtack biscuits. And if you could find an empty tin can, a cup full of hot, greasy water. Bearing in mind that we'd had very little to eat for the previous week, many prisoners became weak and exhausted and could not finish the daily march. They collapsed by the side of the road and couldn't continue. I don't know whether the Germans picked them up by lorry later in the day, but we could not help them. There was a German guard with fixed bayonet at frequent intervals, and some of them were pretty brutal if you broke ranks. On one occasion, marching through a French village, I saw some rhubarb growing in a garden, and while I was pulling it, a guard appeared and fired just over my head. I don't know whether he intended to hit me. In the next village, I asked a French woman for some sugar, which she gave me, but the guard threatened her brutally. Anyhow, that night I managed to make a fire and had a feast of stewed rhubarb. The route of the march, as I remember, was a circular one which took us right back to the Somme and covered some of the well-known towns and battles of the First World War, such as Béthune, Saint-Paul, Lens, Vimy, Arras, Bapaume, Albert, Arras, Doulon, Cambrai, etc. At Cambrai, we were so exhausted, they put us in a French army barracks to sleep on the parade ground and doled us with some French army bread that was green and absolutely rotten. However, we consumed it, and as far as I was concerned, without any ill effects. Next day, we were put in trucks, rail trucks, and taken by rail to somewhere near the Luxembourg border. And we resumed marching through beautiful hilly country of the Ardennes. The advantages were that there was plenty of lovely pure water to drink from the mountain streams, and one kind guard even let us strip off and bathe in one. The disadvantage was marching up the hilly roads in our exhausted condition. As in France, a favourite ploy of the guards, as the march began to straggle in the afternoon, was to say only 2 or 3 more kilometres to the next camp, where there will be a hot meal, etc. It was invariably at least 8 to 10 kilometres and no food at the end of it. I inwardly thank my mother for 22 years of good feeding that gave me the stamina to survive these marches, and in fact I usually managed to arrive in the vanguard, which was a vanguard of the march, because it was better to... You then got a chance to bed down away from the smell of the latrines, and if there was anything in the way of food or drinks going, you were first come, first served. I was very fortunate with my feet. My army boots, reasonably well fitting, but many of the prisoners, in fact, suffered terribly from blistered feet and ulcers in their legs. I remember marching through Bastogne, later to become an epic of American resistance in the Battle of the Bulge. Eventually, we arrived one evening at the German border town of Trier on the Moselle. We were at the end of our tether. Tottering along through the main street, we encountered real hostility from the German civilians, who spat and shouted at us. By this time we were past caring and lay down to a man in the cobbled forecourt to Trier station and slept there all night. In the morning we were put in French cattle trucks labelled 40 men, 80 horses. in fact, they put us about 90 prisoners to a truck. The doors were shut and barred, and one small window was covered with barbed wire. We thought we were only going to a prison camp in Germany. In fact, we spent 2.5 days in these trucks. I think they gave us a little bread and water, but we were not allowed out of the truck for toilet purposes. It was impossible due to lack of space to lay down. The atmosphere and stench was unbelievable. Again, I was lucky in being able to get through my height to get fresh air from the small window. When the Germans eventually opened the door, we fell out and were at first too weak to walk. When we'd recovered a little, we found we were at the Polish town of Toruń on the River Vistula, but renamed Thorn by the German conquerors. We were marched up to a huge fort with exceedingly thick stone walls, which was a relic of the Napoleonic Wars. This was Stamlag or Stalag 20A Thorn, one of the first German prisoner of war camps. For other ranks, all officers were sent to Oflag. Later, we were joined by most of the 51st Scottish Highland Division, captured at St. Valery on the northern coast of France. It was now the 14th of June, and after our privations, the Germans could see we were too weak to do any work for some weeks, so we were allowed to rest and regain strength with regular meals, a small ration of bread and a bowl of vegetable soup of varying quality, plus ersatz or acorn coffee daily. We were issued with a blanket and an old greatcoat, usually Polish or French, sometimes blood-stained, a straw palliasse plus a German army mess tin and water bottle. Prisoners whose boots had fallen apart were given wooden Dutch clogs and foot cloths. We were deloused, heads shaved, completely bald, photographed, looking like real convicts, and given a metal identity disc. My number was 11961, which I shall never forget.